Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome to Renee's Heart to Heart. Happy Tuesday. This morning, I thought we'd talk about something that has actually come to light in the last, I don't know, I would guess like maybe as long as 30 years, and everything that they're finding out about it is, I don't know, very lots of varieties of why. I remember years ago finding out that Alzheimer's was connected to Teflon. When people used the Teflon pots and pans and things like that, they believed that that was one of the things that was almost like poisoning your brain and bringing on the early onset of Alzheimer's. And now I did some research yesterday and I found some information about copper. And one of the things everybody needs to understand about Alzheimer's, now we're going to talk about the connectivity between Alzheimer's and Parkinson's and dementia and all the different things that go with this. It's a very variable problem. And sometimes I suspect, I didn't read this anywhere, but it sounds like it could be misdiagnosed on several different occasions because the effects are very similar in all these different things. However, there's five signs. This is an alert that came up on an Alzheimer's site. There's five signs that you could get Alzheimer's disease. One is copper pipes, seafood, and red meat. And how many people do you know don't eat red meat or seafood or both? So there's a neuroscientist that told the LA Times that a copper intake, even at levels that are considered okay today, harms the barrier that bars the toxins from the brain and increases beta amyloid production. Dean also said that researchers found that when copper builds up in the brain, inflammation can result. Now, imagine this. If you think about this on a very, very entry level, like where I am, it makes a lot of sense because what it means is when the blood's traveling through, it's dropping off some of these particles and destroying what protects your brain cells. So the medical researchers gave mice copper over 3 months using trace amounts in drinking water. And what would be considered one-tenth of the water quality standards set for the copper by the Environmental Protection Agency. These are very, very low levels of copper, equivalent to what people would consume in a normal diet. But the researcher who found opposite results said that the lower levels of copper in the brain match the higher amounts of beta amyloid in brain tissue. Okay, I'm going to read that again. The lower levels of copper in the brain matched with the higher amounts of beta amyloid in the brain tissue. He told the BBC that such low exposure levels used in the Rochester test would mean that copper is acting that way in everyone. He considers copper to be a protective and beneficial in neurodegeneration. Now, so we have different different thoughts on the matter. But when I read that, of course, I did some additional research. And I got a note this morning from Charlie. Charlie, if you're listening, hi, good morning. I'm glad you're listening to the show. And he kind of wanted to know about the connection between Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. Now, I had never heard that, even though I was aware that Parkinson's disease has a dementia involved in it, and I was also aware that years ago, some of the information that I had read, old people may have had Alzheimer's, but they didn't know what to call it back in those days. And early symptoms of dementia were happening to people as young as in their 40s. So I did find out some information, and for those of you who are struggling with this in your life, there's lots of phone numbers. And I'm going to put some of these sites on my Facebook page today, because you can research and you can call some of these numbers. There's a lot of help out there if you're struggling with Alzheimer's. It is, let me just give you this simple answer that they put on which site am I on? On the ASK site. Alzheimer's disease, also known in medical literature as Alzheimer's disease, is, I don't know the difference, Alzheimer's, anyway, is the most common form of dementia. There is no cure for the disease, which worsens as it progresses and eventually leads to death. It was first described by a German psychiatrist and neuropathologist, I don't know how you say this first name, Alice or Aloes Alzheimer, in 1906, so it's been around a long, long time. And it was named after him. Most often, Alzheimer's disease is diagnosed in people over 65 years of age, although the less prevalent early onset Alzheimer's can occur much earlier. In 2006, there were sufferers worldwide. So the deal is that this is something that really can't be helped, and it appears as though there is no way to really make sure how it happens. They did talk a little bit about heredity. They did talk a little bit about the food, the copper, the Teflon, all those kind of things. But I found a pretty interesting article in regard to Parkinson's that relates a lot to the dementia that's involved with Alzheimer's. So I'm going to read that to everybody, but first I'd like to bring in Shelley. Hi, Shel. Good morning. Shelley? Hi, honey.
Okay.
How are you?
Yeah, can you hear me?
I can.
Yeah, I'm in a bad spot here, so I may be a little garbled for about a mile here. My antenna keeps dropping. So
You know, that gives me so much material. You're going to be garbled for a mile. Oh, I can use it so many times.
Yeah, I don't know why I ever go there. I know.
It's you're like my great. You're like my Gracie to my George here.
Yeah, I know. And probably about half your listeners have no idea what that reference meant.
Yeah, well, that's probably true too. I don't know. Probably quite a few of them do. Right, from now on, when we're over with the show, I'm going to have to say good night, Gracie. And you can say good night, Gracie. So the topic this morning, I'm sure you've heard, is Alzheimer's.
Uh-huh.
And it touches many of us, and I hope I'm not speaking out of turn when I say, I know that Valerie is listening, when I say that Valerie's mom, my daughter-in-law, who's married to my son Michael, her mom has Alzheimer's, and her mom mm-hmm. is in her 80s. And I see now in some of the material that I have read that there's a lot of stages of Alzheimer's, a lot of stages. And it kind of shocked me as to seeing how many stages there are, because I just thought it was a decrease in your faculties, you know, as the time went on. But that's not really true. It actually is. It is quite a journey, you might say. But when I looked up, it says Parkinson's, which this is a whole different description, but it sounds very much like Alzheimer's. Parkinson's disease, dementia, is a decline in thinking and reasoning that develops in someone diagnosed with Parkinson's disease at least a year earlier. Common symptoms include changes in memory, concentration, and judgment, trouble interpreting visual information, muffled speech, visual hallucinations, delusions, especially paranoid ideas, depression, irritability, anxiety, sleep disturbances, including excessive daytime drowsiness and rapid eye movement, which is called REM, R-E-M, sleep disorder. And it's estimated that 50 to 80% of those Parkinson's with Parkinson's eventually experience dementia as their disease progresses. The average time for an onset of Parkinson's to developing dementia is about 10 years. So one of the things that I found out in relation to these two things, they don't really connect them, but they are very, very similar. And it's all about neurology. It's all about what's going on in your brain. And then, of course, the Alzheimer's research and the Alzheimer's Foundation of America are amazing. And they've put a lot of help out there for people. But it's only help to cope. It's not help to... There's nothing that we have so far that will solve any of these problems, which I found to be...
Well, part of the problem with a lot of the medical research, and this is why years ago I stopped volunteering for medical research, is that they only look at pharmaceutical solutions. So if there's not a drug out there or a surgery or a procedure that's medical basis, they won't put any money into it. And with all the research that I'm doing, all the books that I've been reading, number one, there are many cases of Alzheimer's that has been completely reversed. There are cases of Parkinson's that have been improved where they arrested the disease. They weren't able to reverse the damage that already took place because of the type of damage that happens in the brain, but they were able to prevent the disease from progressing any further so that whatever disability the person already experienced, at least they knew they were never going to get worse than that and that they didn't have to face the eventual dementia and things like that. But the things that do this are removing certain toxins from the diet and replacing it with certain food items that restore the brain, that help to help the brain to rehabilitate itself, so to speak. All right. Things like I have not used deodorant. I have not used antiperspirant in 15 years because a couple of decades ago.
Yeah, I was going to talk to you about that.
Yeah, I read the connection between the aluminum used in antiperspirant and
right.
the eventual set of Alzheimer's. That's why younger and younger people are getting it because of all these antiperspirants that are sold there and that now they make them sexy, you know, like this guy puts on an accent, all of a sudden he's going to attract all these women. I mean, it's just kind of crazy. But more and more people today are using antiperspirants, and they're really quite toxic to your health. I only use a deodorant, and I stopped using that because of the connection that was made. Now, why isn't this more well-known? Why isn't this more publicized? I mean, the information's out there, but you only hear about pharmaceutical solutions, and if there aren't any pharmaceutical solutions, they say that a disease can't be reversed. And obviously, I know that's not the case. In my own case, I was told by doctors that my situation is irreversible. 15 years later, obviously, it was not. So, you know, so there are, I mean, even John Gray, the author of Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, his latest book, I'm going to have to get the title of that so I can tell your listeners, but in his latest book, he talks about some of the brain conditions. He talks about Parkinson's and some of the diseases that are actually being brought about by some of the pharmaceutical drugs used for high blood pressure and high cholesterol because they reduce the cholesterol too much. They bring it down past the point where it's safe, and cholesterol sheathing on the brain neurons, I'm sure I'm not describing this technically correctly, but it has something to do with the cholesterol that is actually in the brain, and when you reduce that too much, the brain can't fire signals properly. So a lot of brain-related diseases are showing up as a result of some of the medications that take the cholesterol too far the other way. So if you had high cholesterol, some of the medications to control that reverse the issue and now cause a different problem. So now you don't have high cholesterol anymore, but now you're having illnesses pop up as a result of your cholesterol being taken down too far. So it's a very, very complex subject. There's a lot of facets to it. You know, even the mercury in old silver fillings can affect the brain function. And so there's a lot of things out there. Any heavy metal toxicity will affect brain function and can bring on all these different diseases you're talking about. Certain things in the diet, now they're saying they've associated copper to it. First time I've heard that. But there's definitely some prescription drugs that are used for other conditions that have been linked to Parkinson's and Alzheimer's. And then, like I said, the aluminum and antiperspirant. And any time you're going to do anything that's going to detoxify you, like the fish, is kind of like kind of a no-brainer. No pun intended there.
Funny.
Yeah, it came out of my mouth and I was like, oh, okay. But because of the mercury, there's such high levels of mercury in fish, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
you know, even when you think you're buying safe fish, and that messes with brain function big time. So there's a lot of different things. But there's hope there because there's a lot of things you can do to protect the brain and to help it rehabilitate itself and to keep it high functioning.
Mm-hmm. Well, it appears as though, and as I said, as I went through the studies last night and yesterday afternoon, almost every search engine is run by a pharmaceutical company.
Right.
And
right.
For obvious reasons, you know. So, again, it's about, you know, well, and that's science. And you and I both have respect for science, although it does seem strange that if not consuming any kind of heavy metals, years ago putting mercury in people's fillings and, you know, we did a lot of things 50 years ago without enough research
mm-hmm.
because somebody came up with a good idea and thought, oh, my God, this is awesome. These will last forever and filled millions of people's mouths with mercury. And now, as you and I know from the Health Institute, people are struggling. They're paying thousands of dollars to have the mercury removed. And then, of course, eating utensils, that's another thing. You know, the forks and knives and spoons that you use, the aluminum foil that you buy, the aluminum cooking pans that you get. And again, let me make something very clear, and I know I say this a lot, but it's the truth. If you have a really good regimen, if you have if you're in relatively good health, a lot of these things don't bother you. So millions of people can go on using millions. Let's face it, millions of people can have a drink all day, eat sugar all night, and they're still fine. It all depends on what kind of constitution they have and what other maladies their bodies are trying to fight. But then you have somebody who has a weakened immune system, maybe from hereditary for hereditary reasons, maybe for early lifestyle. Who knows? There's all different reasons. But then one thing can be their demise. One thing like the aluminum.
Mm-hmm.
I do want to
say one thing to that because you've said that before, and we all know people that have terrible lifestyles and are very, very healthy. But one of the things I found, all right, and I found this very interesting. As a matter of fact, I'm actually going to put this in my book because they did a case study. What they showed is that, you know, our bodies are extremely resilient, and you can actually have a strength of constitution that's hereditary in your family. But what happens is over time, when you are being just kind of haphazard with your lifestyle, you're smoking, you're drinking too much, you're eating all the wrong foods and stuff like that, and it's not affecting you, but then you have children, it manifests in the down generation. They've done studies on a lot of these people. people that just seem to be able to do anything, and they're very, very healthy, but then they've looked at their children and their grandchildren, and each successive generation has degenerated in health, and they're finding out...
Well, of course,
that
makes perfect sense.
Right. So what it is that it's going to affect you, but the material that you're creating the next generation from is degraded. So although you were lucky enough because of your heredity to be able to maintain your own good health, you're passing on damaged genetic material. There's no other way to put it, so that subsequent generations from that person that's very, very healthy aren't so healthy anymore. And then you see a breakdown in the, you know, in successive generations. And they've actually done studies on this. So I thought that was a very interesting find. So that's something that makes
a lot of sense. Like, you know, I mean, if you, it's like everything else. I mean, we talked about this many, many times. Heredity plays a big part in the life that is set out there for you. I did want to make mention on some of these sites are very simple, and I found one that's really entry-level kind of understanding. And I'm going to read it just so that people know what to expect and if you see these signs in yourself, in a loved one, in a spouse, or anything, then you need to take some steps to do some things. And I do think before you start on heavy pharmaceuticals, it's always smart to see if there's something else, maybe giving up something or adding something into your diet or something that's going to be beneficial to your health is a much smarter, much more educated decision. This particular site that I found, what is Alzheimer's? Alzheimer's is a disease that attacks the brains. It is the most common form of dementia. What is dementia? Dementia is a general term for a decline in mental ability severe enough to interfere with your daily life. What's the diagnosis? If you or a loved one have concerns about memory loss or other symptoms of Alzheimer's or related dementia, it's important to be evaluated by a physician. And when Shelley and I talk about ways to overcome some of these challenges by diet and exercise and all the things that come very freely and very easily, and it's something you're going to do anyway, we're not saying that you don't need to be evaluated. You cannot fight anything unless you have a diagnosis. Before you make any big changes, any radical changes in anything you're doing, you should get somebody who knows what they're talking about and let them do an evaluation of what's going on with you. A diagnosis is imperative. You can't find something you don't know the name of. Now, the stages show how the disease unfolds, but progression will vary greatly from person to person. Well, that's not surprising. As far as treatments are concerned, here again, this is sponsored by a pharmaceutical company. There are medications available to help ease the symptoms. And there is Alzheimer's newsletters, associations, things like that that you can get involved in. So I think that there is a lot of help out there for people to get answers. I think that's a good idea to research these kind of things so that you know, you have a little idea of what's going on. And I think that the more you understand, the better you are able to make decisions about yourself. Now, I wanted to touch on this because, like I said, Charlie asked me to see the connection. And there is a connection, according to most of the reports I read, between Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. And I always thought Parkinson's, even though we've seen a lot of people with Parkinson's at the Health Institute, and most of them have more motor skill problems than they do any kind of dementia that I've ever seen. How about you, Shel?
The people I knew, they had complete cognitive ability, but like you said, they had motor skills, you know, the tremors and things like that.
Well, this says Alzheimer's and Parkinson's diseases. An estimated 5.4 million people in the United States, wow, that's a lot of people, have Alzheimer's disease.
Yeah.
Two-thirds of those with this disease are women. By 2050, researchers estimate that the number of people with this disease will nearly triple to 16 million. Of Americans 65 and over, 1 in 8 has Alzheimer's disease, and nearly half of the people aged 85 and older have the disease. Deaths from Alzheimer's disease increased 66% in a very small amount of time. In 8 years, from 2000 to 2008, it increased by 66%. Parkinson's disease affects approximately 500,000 Americans, with about 50,000 new cases annually. That would be once a year. The prevalence of the disease is expected to double by 2030. Lack of Parkinson's disease registries, however, make it difficult to estimate the true incidence and trends over time. So in other words, they got numbers, but it's limited because a lot of people don't put that into the mix, apparently. The Alzheimer's Association estimates that national direct and indirect annual costs for caring for individuals with Alzheimer's disease are $183 billion. Estimates of the costs of Parkinson's disease range from $13 billion to $28.5 billion a year. Now, there's a radical difference there, obviously. So my instinct tells me that because these two illnesses are so much alike and carry so much of the same side effects, I'm wondering if there's any misdiagnosis and any confusion about which is which, especially if there's no tremors.
Well, one other thing you have to keep in mind, I'm sure you're going to remember this, but two other diseases also have brain function degeneration that are not brain diseases. And once that particular condition is taken care of, the brain function returns to normal, and that's systemic candida and Lyme's disease. Now, they
right.
both attack the brain. They cause brain fog. They cause a lot of the things that when you were reading dementia before, I was like, oh, my God, that's like the same symptoms of somebody who has systemic candida or who has Lyme's disease where it's actually gotten into the brain. Now, the good thing about that is that both candida and Lyme's disease are completely reversible, although doctors say it's not. I had systemic candida and Lyme's disease, both. And I was told by all the doctors I saw that these conditions were completely irreversible, that they were just going to try to help me. I wasn't having severe brain issues, but I was suffering from the brain fog. There were times that my memory didn't serve me properly or where I couldn't think of how to do something. Like I'd be looking at paperwork and I would just like get frustrated because it was something I had done 20 times and then all of a sudden I was like, okay, I didn't know how to proceed and then have to get up and walk around, have a glass of water or something. Back then my diet wasn't what it is now, so a lot of times when I ate or drank something, I was compounding the problem and I wasn't getting clarity. But I did keep pushing through it, and as my lifestyle improved, eventually, I did eradicate the candida, and I did. I still test positive for Lyme, but I'm non-symptomatic. So even though, although it's still part of my physiology, I'm not affected by it anymore. I test exposed and not positive anymore, and so that means it shows that at one time I had Lyme disease, but it's not active in my system causing me problems. So that's something, if somebody's gotten this diagnosis, they really want to get a second or third opinion because you're right. It's very easy to ignore this diagnosis because there are other conditions that are not brain diseases that can cause a lot of the same symptoms that go under that umbrella of dementia.
Let me say this, since you brought those two things in, candida and Lyme disease, which you and I, I remember a young man many, many years ago who brought me an entire book that he had researched. I mean, all printouts from the computer of all the different things that happen with Lyme disease. And prior to meeting this young man, I had no idea Lyme disease. We had had people with Lyme disease. I was aware of some of the effects, some of the trauma that goes on with Lyme disease. But this young man opened my eyes to all of the neurological problems. However, one of the other things that, and I tell my kids about this all the time, when I first started in 2001 at the Institute, I learned very quickly about insecticides. And people that came to the Institute had been poisoned by insecticides and the chemicals used. And, of course, through the years, we've met people who, one lady comes to mind who bought a mobile home, really a mobile home, like a travel home that pulled with a truck, and moved herself to Arizona up on top of a mountain to get away from all the chemicals. She would wear a gas mask. She was a pistol. And she would wear a gas mask around everybody, and she had real chemical issues. Now, because of people like her, and we once had a ballerina who stayed with us who also suffered with that, I love perfume. Anybody who knows me knows that I love perfume. I've worn the same perfume since I was 15 years old. And working at Hippocrates, I was not supposed to wear my perfume. So you could always smell it on me because my clothes, everything smells like it. Like I said, 15 years, that's 50 years of wearing the same perfume. So one day, just as a test, I was kind of poo-pooing everybody's problems with smells. I was like, so you walk away. You know, what's the deal? And I really was. I was having a lot of trouble conjuring up any empathy for these people because I thought they were being a little bit dramatic about all of it. So what I did, I took a shower. I didn't put any perfume on myself, no deodorant, no nothing. I went to the mall. And I walked into Macy's, and I was very, very observant about my smells. And it was awful. It was really awful. And I will always be glad that I did it because I thought to myself, my God, these poor people, no wonder they get so, overwhelmed by all of this. Very recently they stopped spritzing you when you walked into a Macy's or to a Lord & Taylor and things like that because of people. And what happens when we talked the other night about anaphylactic shock and things like that, that can happen to these people who have these chemical sensitivities. So, of course,
another thing that I suffered with, it was called MCS, which stood for multiple chemical sensitivity. And there was a period of time, this was near the last few years before I started changing my lifestyle, as things kept progressing and just getting worse and worse and worse for me. And in the last few years, I suffered with MCS on top of everything else. And like you said, if I walked into a store, the worst area of the store for me was the sneaker or tire section, where you smell that rubber. Now I can walk into those areas of a store now, and I'm not even really aware of the smell anymore. But when I had active, full-blown MCS, I could tell where the tire store was, like 10 rows away from it, because the rubber smell would actually make my chest hurt. I would all of a sudden have problems breathing. I would get severe brain fog, where all of a sudden I would get disoriented, and I would always just move myself away from it. But if I accidentally turned a corner and got into the tire section, or was walking along it and didn't realize it at first and was taking in the fumes, it would really mess me up as far as my heart and my mental faculties. Once I got away from it in fresh air, I was okay, because one of the things I did, and if anybody has these type of issues, I always recommend this, I never allowed myself to panic or get angry. So I didn't say, why do they have this here, or allow myself to panic. I would just move myself to a place where there was fresh air, and within a few minutes I would be fine because I didn't allow myself to get emotionally upset about what just happened to me. I just kept things under control, got myself to a place where I was away from the source of the fumes, and then within a few minutes in fresher air, I was okay. But that was pretty intense. If I had stayed there, I used to wonder, like, would I actually have a heart attack? Would I have passed out? I mean, what would it have progressed to? Because it was pretty intense, and it was very painful, especially the pain in my chest was quite intense, and that's why I was kind of like, I had to move away from the area. But, chemical sensitivities can be very devastating.
It's also not just, it doesn't increase just your sensitivities. It truly can be the mechanism that gives you some of the diseases we're talking about. The risk
exactly.
of cognitive decline, dementia, and Parkinson's disease increases with age, but you can accelerate it by being around environmental chemicals and contaminants over and over and over again. I mean,
absolutely.
before they took the DDT out of bug sprays, we didn't have head lice anymore. I remember my mother telling me stories. My grandfather ran greenhouses, and they would always have problems with bugs in the greenhouse because nature set it up so that the bigger bugs would kill the littler bugs. They would burrow. They would make the soil healthy. Their dead bodies in the soil would also, enrich the soil, make it dark, make it beautiful, make it healthy to grow all the vegetables in. So when we started getting too many bugs, somebody, I don't know who, someday I'll research that, but they figured out a way to kill some of the bugs. And like we talked about last night, what they did was mutate most of them, and now nothing kills them. So now we've gone back to something that's a little bit more natural. We've let them take care of themselves. And in most cases, of course, that's what organic farming is all about. It's about not saturating the food you're going to eat with something that kills bugs. If it kills bugs, what the hell is it doing to you? So
Exactly.
But the part of it that I noticed was especially these young people who got involved in pesticide sprays of homes, that was their job. They worked for Orkin or they worked for, I can't even think of the names of all of them. There's millions of them out there now, especially here in Florida, because bugs are a big part of Florida. And some of these people would come to us incredibly ill. However, most of the illnesses that I ever witnessed or helped with or anything that were directly related to chemical exposure, there was no diagnosis about the brain. And now I see that there should have been, but there wasn't. It was almost always about breathing. It was almost always about lungs, throat tissue.
Yep.
Esophageal tissue, all of those kind of things were harmed by breathing in the pesticides. But now, of course, we see through years of that, if your throat can take it and your lungs can take it, then it attacks your brain is probably what happens. But in one study, 21% of the thousands of patients with cognitive disorders had medical histories that suggested that they may have been exposed to chemicals, either in their workplace or from some other environmental source. Clinicians found that a history of toxic exposure was associated with cognitive decline and at a significantly younger age. Unfortunately, few of the more than 100 industrial chemicals that are known to be toxic to the nervous system generally have been studied for specific impacts on the adult brain, but those few are illustrative. So in other words, they didn't even worry about the little kids. They took an adult brain, which has grown and calloused and become accustomed, it's like anything else. You you can put it someplace, and after years of having the same thing, eventually it builds, well, like the roaches built up a mutation to things like that. And so checking an adult brain was probably the wrong thing to do. They probably should have started paying attention to really young people. In the 80s, case reports of individuals who developed Parkinson's-like symptoms after injecting a synthetic drug contaminated with 1-methyl-4-phenyl, oh, God knows, MPTP, sparked an interest in looking for environmental chemicals that might have similar effects. Early studies focused on chemicals with structural similarities to MPTP or its breakdown products, including the pesticide, Rotenone, and the herbicide Paraquat. Extensive laboratory and evidence now shows that exposure to certain kinds of pesticides increases the risk of Parkinson's disease. Well, I think this particular site is actually in line with what we have already seen in in the things that we've seen, and explains a lot. So
well,
I think
a couple
what
other
we,
things that affect brain function, and this is something that, I mean, because you know that I've been studying this for 15 years, but I really don't, I don't shop in like regular grocery stores for a lot of my cosmetic needs, because most cosmetics have things in them that are detrimental to our health. Because you have to remember, whatever you put on your skin, which includes your scalp, you're ingesting. For all intents and purposes, your skin is your biggest organ, and through the pores, whatever you put on, that's how come a lot of medications now are salves or patches, because you can ingest things through your skin, or you do ingest things, so whatever you put on. So things like a lot of the sunscreens, for instance, unless you're getting a sunscreen that is lead-free and that actually says that it's lead-free and it's sold in some health food store, you're poisoning yourself, because a lot of sunscreens have heavy metals in them. Another thing is shampoos. When you see the lauryl sulfates and things like that, or the parabens, the things like that, that's not good for you, all right? You're absorbing that through your scalp. So like the shampoos that I buy them in Whole Foods or some health food store, and I make sure that it says that it's, you know, paraben-free and that it's lauryl sulfate-free and that it doesn't have any of those, because if you absorb that through your scalp, it's harmful to you. It toxifies the body. It's not something that's okay. It's a toxin to us. And they use so many ingredients in cosmetics for companies that aren't sensitive to this. In your toothpaste, fluoride has been connected to a lot of brain disorders. I have not used fluoride toothpaste in over 10 years because I had read studies about that. So all the toothpaste that I buy is always fluoride-free. And now they're putting out water that has fluoride in it, and there are so many websites attacking that decision. It's ludicrous, all right? Fluoride,
well, in the 50s, they did that in every school. In the 50s,
nutty.
They put fluoride in all the drinking fountains in every school that I know of.
But fluoride is a toxin to the body, even in very low grades. So how that got back into the water now is very questionable to me. But the bottom line is these things are all toxic to the body. And when you start educating yourself more to what your choices are, the latest one now that they just proved, triclosan, I think it's called triclosan or something like that. But if you look at antibacterial soap, like the hand soaps, you know, you get the antibacterial soap from the store, and it's in a liquid form, and it says it has triclosan in it. Well, now they've just proven that triclosan is a toxin to the body. So all these natural companies now are coming out with triclosan-free antibacterial soap. So I actually bought a couple of them, and they work just fine. You know, but now they're using tea tree oil or something, you know, or some natural antibacterial agent that doesn't mess with the immune system because they've done all these tests on triclosan and they find out that it has toxic effects on the body. So one of the things to help prevent brain disorders is to remove a lot of the toxins. Start looking at your cleaning products. Start looking at your personal hygiene products. And look at all the other brands that are out there, like Ecover, and there's like four or five of them that are all, they all work with nature. So they take all the toxins, all the heavy chemicals out, and the products work just fine. I mean, I use Seventh Generation is another one. There's a third one that's a biggie, Ecover, Seventh Generation. There's a third brand, and I'm drawing a blank on it. But at any rate, and these companies all have cleaning products and personal hygiene products out. Tom's of Maine, Jason, Nature's Gate, those are three brands of personal hygiene products. And they all have products out there that work just as well as the name brands, but they're free of metals and other chemical toxins that really don't need to be in there to begin with. But I suppose they're cheaper to manufacture with, and that's why they are.
Well, let me say this on a note like that. As you know, at the Institute, I used to give a class on cleaning and things that you could use around your house that are food grade and won't hurt you. And let me say to you that every time you take a bath or a shower and use baking soda in your bathtub, in your shower, on your person, I don't suggest baking soda in your hair to rinse your hair and to get all the junk out of your hair. Like if you use perfumed hairsprays, if you use vinegar, a vinegar rinse on your hair, a white vinegar rinse on your hair will take all the excess soap, will remove all kinds of stuff from your hair and leave your hair nice and soft. And baking soda on your body in a tub and going down your drain takes care of like 15 different things in one shot. It cleans your skin. It leaves you soft. It's a deodorizer. It cleans the drain when it goes down the drain. Polishing a bath or a shower with baking soda is amazing. You put the soda in there like you would use an old-fashioned Comet or Ajax that all have chlorine and different kinds of abrasives in them. The baking soda will not the enamel. You can also make homemade toothpaste, and I do this for the kids here. They don't use it all the time, but if I see that their teeth are yellowing and stuff like that, I give this to them. I make hydrogen peroxide and baking soda toothpaste. And it cleans out. It helps them if I see anything like a gum problem, if their gums are white or anything like that. A softer toothbrush, not a real hard toothbrush like everybody thinks you should be using. But all of these things. And one of the things that used to get a laugh out of all the guests at Hippocrates, and I say, and now that you can't eat mayonnaise anymore, or you're not going to eat mayonnaise anymore, mayonnaise is an amazing furniture polish. And it will take off of real wood furniture. You smear it on. Let it sit for a little while and then buff it out. And if you've got like little rings from setting a water glass on real wood, if it's not really, you know, been there for too long, many times you can take it right away. So all of these things are more beneficial to you when you're cleaning your house. And like I said, baking soda is cheap, cheap, cheap. You can get a 5-pound bag of baking soda for like $10. And that 5-pound bag of soda will take care of all kinds of stuff in your home and on you personally. So,
and peroxide can be substituted and should be substituted for chlorine bleach. Chlorine bleach is highly, highly toxic to the environment. It's highly toxic to, I mean, you're not supposed to breathe it in. There's all those warnings. It, you know, people, remember when people were mixing it with ammonia? And it was creating this deadly gas.
Oh, years ago, chlorine woke up kitchen floor from doing that.
Oh, my God. You know, I mean, you can really mess yourself up. But
explains a lot.
Right. But there's actually a website out there. Somebody has sent me the link to it. I'll send it to you. But it's like all the uses for hydrogen peroxide, which is which is actually safe because you can swish it in your mouth, you can put it on your skin, you know, things like that. You don't want to dilute it. You don't want to put it on your skin because it can burn a little bit. But hydrogen peroxide is not harmful to the environment. I use hydrogen peroxide bleach. I get it at Publix. It's chlorine-free bleach. They sell it in the laundry aisle. It's their Greenwise organic brand. And it's it's a chlorine-free clothes bleach. And I put that in my wash to kind of brighten my clothes up a little bit. But chlorine is very, very toxic to the environment, and it's also toxic to humans. So there are safe choices. They're cheaper, you know, things like that. And unfortunately, too many decisions of companies that make cleaning products and health products are based on the cost of the ingredient and not putting something out there that's really and truly safe and effective for it. So it's up to the consumer to educate themselves.
In fairness to the productivity of all of these things, you know, investments are made, recipes are written, all these kind of things happen, and then they more or less have to use up what they've got. I mean, it's kind of like a supply and demand thing. But I do think that we've come a very long way. I think that we started out better than what we became, and now we're coming back a little bit more to nature in so many different ways that all of our innovations that we came up with in the early years, like the 40s, 50s, and 60s, are now being turned around, and we realize that even though they were very innovative and there were some very smart people working on them, there wasn't enough testing done to make sure that they weren't going to be harmful. And part of this study, I want to make sure I get this in before we're out of time. Remember I mentioned the aluminum. It says, new animal studies also have resurrected the 1960s controversy about the role of aluminum in neurodegenerative disease. One small study showed that when rodents were chronically exposed to dietary aluminum, similar to typical human exposure levels, aluminum accumulated in the brain. A large follow-up studied in rats showed that the more aluminum a rat received in its diet, the more memory loss the rat exhibited. So there's still some correlation with the aluminum. And then, of course, there's the PCBs, which we talked about a lot at Hippocrates as well. But before that was banned in the 70s, there was a lot of things like in your plastic and your paints and your lubricants and your coolants and in all the electrical equipment and adhesive. As a result of the widespread use of all those products, many of us have been exposed to all of it. And, you know, sometimes, like I said before, it takes years and years and years before there's any manifestations from things like that. But, you know, do you remember years ago when babies were chewing on the sides of their cribs?
Oh,
and
yeah.
And they realized lead in the paint was actually, in some cases, diagnosis of crib death ended up being the baby had been sucking on the side of the crib or chewing on it. And that was actually their demise was the result of chewing on the crib. And then they came out
right.
with lead-free and all the other things that come with it. But in the interim, you know, a baby, if you put it in their hand, the first place their hand goes is to their mouth.
That's right.
Plastic pacifiers. My kids all used a pacifier. I didn't see anything wrong with it. And the one doctor that I had said it makes them develop their sucking mechanism with their tongue and makes their tongue strong. It won't hurt them. They won't use it when they get tired of it. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Are you hearing all that?
No. I didn't hear you for a few. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here, but I heard a whole bunch of interference on the line. Oh, well.
Yeah, I didn't hear any interference. I didn't hear you at all anymore.
Oh, okay. Well,
that was weird.
It was almost like somebody got on the infamous party line. So, but for 30 years now, a lot of that stuff has been banned. And it continued to contaminate the environment because they don't break down so easy. They don't destroy. They don't, you know, and, of course, we realize that. And here in Florida, which is another story we're going to do sometime, for those of you who don't live in Florida, you may not know this, but in various sections of Florida, you have these great big hills. Now, Florida has flat land. I mean, you can look for miles and just see the tops of palm trees. But every now and then you'll ride into a little hamlet or a town or something, and here's this great big hill. It's our garbage. That's how we dispose of our garbage. And for so many years, without having things that could be destroyed by just being thrown away, and it's huge business here, huge business. And they have tunnels with trucks and like railroad tracks and everything that carry the dumpsters and do all this. And, of course, in New York City, it's even worse. In New York City, they found places to carry garbage way far away and dump them in unsuspecting neighborhoods. And garbage is garbage. And, of course, if you drive by the dump here in Pompano is the one that comes to my mind because I've watched it grow from a rather high hill to, you know, Montezuma. And it makes you wonder what breathing that air is doing to everybody. Because even though, like I said, they bury it and cover it and everything, it's still, you know how ecology works. It gets back into the air. So all of these things mean what? At the end of the day, what's the best thing that we can tell everybody to do to protect themselves? Because they can't protect themselves from outside energies in any way, shape, or form. So what's the point we need to make with everybody so that they understand if they're feeling like, well, who gives a shit? Now I'll do whatever I want because I'm going to get this anyway.
I think the bottom line is that anytime you start making some better choices, it just lightens the load, the overall load on the body. So if our listeners will just start reading some of their packages, being more aware of what they put in their bodies, making better choices, over time, they're going to be improving their situation. Think about where you might be bringing metal toxicity into your into your body. So just make better choices, be aware of it, and start doing things proactively that are good for the brain. Drink water, not soda, things like that. So I think that's where we have to go. I think that people just have to start being more aware of what they do and how it can toxify the body. And just start out small. Don't think you have to change everything you eat and everything you put on your body and everything you wash your house with overnight. Have it be a process. You know, look at one thing this week,
and
then in a couple weeks look at something else. And
just
make it a process. Don't be overwhelmed by it.
Well, and make yourself a stronger machine. You know, the stronger machine you are, the less these outside entities are going to hurt you. And that's true of everything. That's true of how you absorb other people's hurtful words, how you absorb the poisons and the toxins that are in the air. It's all about you and how strong you make your own machine. So when you walk away today, think about all the things in your personal life that you can do to build yourself, to make yourself a stronger entity. And I want to wish everybody out there a wonderful, wonderful day. The sun is shining through my office window. It looks beautiful out there. It's going to be a great, great day. And tomorrow we're going to celebrate Martin Luther King Day. We're going to talk about the I Have a Dream speech. And we're going to touch base on the fact that we knew Coretta King and Yolanda and Bernice and Dexter and Martin Jr. So I want to wish everybody a great, great day. Go out there and knock them dead and give it the best you can. And we will talk to you tomorrow morning, 7 a.m. Bye-bye, everybody. Have a great day. Bye, Shel. Bye, Valerie.
Bye. Bye, everybody. All right. Talk to you tomorrow.
All right, honey. Bye-bye.